This is Icon Art Radio with Alan Cobb, Donna Colby, and me, Bill Teeple. The theme of today's show is
boxes. Oh, peanuts.
And that's the characteristic sound of a box being opened. The box had just arrived at the door just as we opened the show, and that is our theme, boxes. So, Alan...
Little boxes on the hillside, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky.
Say a word about how all this got started with the making of the birdhouses and the boxes.
Elaine Duncan and I built this birdhouse for the Fairfield Art Association's birdhouse project on the nodes of the town square, as they seem to be called now. The little bulges with plantings in them are now called nodes. I think of them as bulges, or peninsulas, or things you can dislocate your front right wheel on while driving around the square. And the particular birdhouse that we ended up with is a central column encrusted with boxes of different sizes, some of which are actually birdhouses and others are just closed boxes for no apparent reason. And that got me thinking about all the boxes I'll be building this summer for more sculptures that I'm working on involving sound and vibration and other kinds of sound-based sculptures. And so I started looking into ways of making boxes and was delighted to find some really good books on joinery and how to make dovetail joints and lap joints and spline joints and all the different kinds of joints that a cabinet maker or fine woodworker would be working with. And then I was talking with my shop neighbor, Jim Cassidy, who makes really nice furniture. And he uses a joinery technique known as biscuit joinery, where you use a specialized power tool to cut little slots in two pieces of wood and join them by putting little biscuits of ash, I guess it is, in the slots along with the glue. And it turns out to be an incredibly efficient, practical way of joining pieces of wood. The biscuits align the wood nicely and they're forgiving in one plane while being very precise in the other plane. And they make it possible to build very, very nice, clean, elegant joints with no visible fasteners of any kind, no screws, no drilling, and so forth. And although obviously the craftsmanship of a beautifully done dovetailed joint is a piece of art in its own right, it's also nice to be able to make clean, elegant carcasses, they're called in the trade, without having to spend a whole lot of time, especially if your goal is making a sculpture that's going to be painted and disguised in other ways so that the craftsmanship doesn't show anyway. So that just sort of led me into thinking about boxes in general and how we are so utterly surrounded by them, especially in the modern world. And apart from an occasional architectural attempt to escape from boxiness, once you get inside even the least boxy piece of architecture, you generally find yourself in a box sooner or later. And I remember living in an A-frame one summer when I was in college, and it was horrible because it wasn't a box. Yeah. The walls sloped in and made you feel claustrophobic, and you couldn't push a chair up against the wall. And if you wanted to hang a picture on the wall, it dangled out into the room and didn't work right. And if you walked up to get something on the floor, at the bottom of the floor, you hit your head on the roof as you approached the wall. Just a terrible idea, which is probably why we don't have a grand tradition of A-frames stretching back centuries. But boxes are everywhere. Everything seems to be a box. And of course, boxy is even more ubiquitous than literal boxes, because everything that isn't a box, practically everything I can see from where I'm sitting is, if it's not a box, it's rectilinear like a box and could fit nicely into a box or could be converted into a box. So what does this say about our aesthetics, about our view of the world? Our paintings tend to be square, except for Robert Horline's recent departures from that.
Well, and also, even why is it, like, you know, you look at anybody's television or speaker systems and things like that, and they're not only boxes, but they're usually black and or silver, black and or silver color, too.
Yeah.
It's just, there's a certain convention for...
Well, for tech,
those
yeah.
kind of objects, but... And then if you have things like filing cabinets, the cheap ones are just plain old metal, and then you can get a fancy one that's all nice and wood, but it's basically the same exact thing. It's just that it's the material gives it a little classier. Or
there is something nice about the way a speaker sometimes juxtaposes the circular speaker inside the square or rectangular box.
Well, I think as all sorts of aesthetics play within the context of boxes, but box is really what we're living in.
Yeah.
In this culture, I'm trying to think of other cultures that it wasn't so dominant, like wikiups and
kivas and
that kind of
teepees,
thing in other cultures. But igloos. I think there were other cultures that thought not so boxy. I think Western culture, and especially European culture, thinks boxy. And I think that the A-frame is a very simple structure to construct, and that's where you get that, and then probably the teepee too. But I think there are cultures who tend to think more rounded. But it's so functional. When you come right down to it, it's so functional, because... Yeah. The flat walls are nice. Mm-hmm. The flat ceiling, the most you can get more stuff into it. Mm-hmm. That angle thing you were talking about is always difficult.
You're into boxes.
What else are you going to do with your box except fill it with stuff?
That's right.
And then, you know, when people start thinking the way we've just been describing about how conventional it is, then the expression came up to think outside the box, because boxes are not only physical boxes, but they are categories of things and defined elements of something. And so there's both playing together. There's the, and boxes can be, I was just over at Madeleine de Joly's house, and she showed me this gorgeous little box that is a traditional kind of box that I don't know what Asian culture it is. It was an Asian box that they used to honor different members of their family. It's a long, narrow, it was about maybe a foot tall. And inside the box, it was open on the front end, and it had a little box that fit, like a lid that fit over the entire thing. Like the box, the lid was open at the bottom and fit over this whole. So the lid itself was like a foot high and narrow, maybe like 4 inches square, and would fit over
slipped
the whole thing.
Over.
You take the lid off and it's open in the front like a little skinny stage. And then inside there are these pieces of wood that had writing on them, Asian writing on them, and little pictures that would represent different people in their family. It could be a living person or an ancestor, and they would honor them maybe on their birthday or something like that. They would put this, there were maybe three or four of these inside it, and they would put the one in the front that they were honoring, probably put it on a little altar. But it was one of the most beautiful boxes that I've ever seen, and even the cover, which was very plain, that you put over the top, was lovely, with a little circle at the bottom. And
so why is it so fundamental, the box? I mean, it's when I try to think think outside the box, when I try to think of what is a more functional way to go, my mind comes back to the box as being the most functional, sort of like multi-useful shape for all of these things we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, of course, in sort of fundamental side of mathematics, you can say that cubes are capable of being packed with absolute, you know, perfect density, whereas with spheres they line up in a certain way, but there are gaps between mm-hmm. them. And other kinds of geometric figures can be packed perfectly, but they're much more complicated and they're a lot harder to build.
Well, that's true, and even cars now are becoming boxy, like the new models of cars that are like very boxy at the back that people like because you can put more stuff in them.
Well, in a boxy rear end,
making really, really rounded cars for a style for
yeah.
quite a while.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of arbitrary, you know, change too, just for stylistic
purposes. But the
car,
no matter how round it got, is still, you can still visualize it based on a box.
A box,
Which is, in art, you know, we
learned. Or a small box on top of a longer box.
Cézanne's the one that taught us to visualize everything as either a cone mm-hmm. or a cylinder or a rectilinear solid like a cube. And so I know when I'm drawing and looking at anything that the tree, the such and such, falls into one of these categories. And so I'm very much used to looking at anything as it would be structured inside a box in order to figure the perspective of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the car is like, no matter what stylistic shape they give it, is really essentially a box.
Right. Well, and we have a kind of a biomorphic component to it. We're built vertically with bilateral symmetry, and we look at a horizon that's out there from the beginning of our lives. And so we've got a fundamental knowledge of vertical as being a kind of absolute and horizontal as being a kind of absolute. And those are really the first two steps in making something rectangular.
Right, and if you don't stand the person or the thing straight up, perpendicular, mm-hmm. it falls over.
Right.
So that's a fundamental there.
Right.
Well, and it makes you feel weird. Like if you've ever been into those kind of crazy houses where you, the crooked, how you know, tourist attractions where they've actually built a house on a hillside that's tipped. And so you're standing in and it looks like gravity isn't working properly here, but it's just that the building is tilted and it's really feels so mysterious, but it's just because it's not built like a box like we normally do.
Yeah.
Well, that's the gravity is when I said the person fall over, then brings up what you brought up, which is the issue of gravity.
Right.
And gravity is a force that seems to be perpendicular somehow to the plane of the earth. So that's the pattern in a way that you're building these boxes on.
So nature is providing us with the elements of the box right from the get-go. And then there, from an engineering standpoint, even in the simplest forms, if you're capable of fabricating a surface of some kind, a panel of any kind, if you make it rectangular, you can fit them together and make shapes out of them. Mm. If you don't make it rectangular, they don't fit together too well unless it's some other polyhedron with straight sides. So straight sides are tremendously practical, and limiting yourself to four straight sides adds yet another dimension of practicality.
So beyond practicality, though, there's something that appeals to us in a different kind of way. Because even as children, we go out, you know, we have all of this open space around us. We go out in the backyard, and there's a whole big yard. But we take a little card table out there and put blankets over it and create a little box-like thing to crawl into that's really appealing. Or else we make playhouses, you know. We get the refrigerator, the new refrigerator comes, and the big appliance box is there on the back porch, and we turn it into a little house or something and want to get inside this box. And so,
well, that's a real fundamental thing. That's very appealing. The creating a space, creating an interior.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as you create an interior, of course, you've defined it in terms of an exterior, but it's fascinating. Architecture is a really exciting field to find something. When the tragedy in Haiti was what everyone was thinking about a few months ago, I remember Paul Glossop put together a frame of PVC pipe inside the armory and used it to support a parachute. And it made a dome, which you could use as shelter from the sun and a little bit of privacy and so on. And it was very, very easy to put together and use, you know, surplus materials and so forth. But even that thing, we're inside the old armory and you put up these, you know, little arcs of PVC pipe and then throw the parachute over it, which was, the pipe was designed so the parachute would fit perfectly. And suddenly you have this little place.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it wasn't that little. It was probably 20 feet in diameter. And you go inside and you're in it. You're in a place. You've created a place.
I want one of those in my backyard.
Oh, you can have one. Paul would be delighted to build you one, I'm sure. It only takes a few hours to completely construct it. And it's just, I remember as a kid, propping things up, a couple of old doors out in the barn or something, and it suddenly it was a place. And creating a place is really interesting. We like that sense of being enclosed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even miniature places, like being a girl, I always had a dollhouse, and I loved a dollhouse, which was essentially a miniature house with one side cut off, right, so that you could play in these little rooms. And then later, as an artist, I got fascinated by shadow boxes when I saw Joseph Cornell's incredible magical worlds that he would create inside a box. My son Dane went through a shadow box phase where he created the most incredible little, you know, he found like a dead tarantula in New Mexico one time, and instead of just like looking at it and being fascinated by it, he decided to make a little mini stage set for the dead tarantula.
Well, of course.
He put it in there and then put like a figure of a person dancing the tarantella, and he learned the whole history about, you know, whatever St. Vitus or whatever it was. Like, he just like took it from this one dead tarantula, he took it to all of these different levels and put all of the symbols that related to all these things into a little box. That's very small. The little box was maybe 6 inches long and 4 inches high, but it had all kinds of, and he rigged up little lights inside, battery powered lights that lit the whole thing. It was very fascinating. And you can look at that thing over and over again and never get tired of looking at it,
yeah,
because it's in this little thing you peek into.
Yeah. Yeah. Peeking into things is also very appealing.
Yeah, there's, I don't know, there's some, just for me, there's aesthetic satisfaction in creating boxes. It also reminds me of Carlos Ferguson, who I want to have some of his pieces in the next exhibit, who makes boxes that you peek through a little hole, and he has little realms inside there, and they're so compelling. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about that little inner world that's inside a box. And then I made... I had this issue with putting works on paper behind a frame inside glass, because you have to do that. It's the way it's done. And I didn't like it because it felt like it was the life of the thing was being sealed up, and it was being mummified, really. I mean, mm-hmm. It was like a mausoleum for a drawing. It was dead behind that glass, and it had the reflection too, which just took away from the direct experience of the beautiful softness of the paper. So this is a dilemma that we all deal with as artists, is to frame or not to frame, and how it has to be, you know, for collectors, they want it framed, they want it protected, and all this stuff. So one of the ways I solved that issue was to paint small on little pieces of paper, and then I made little boxes, is what I'm getting to be the houses that they lived in. So the little paintings lived in a house made out of little bits. I started with balsa wood. Then I started, ripping little pieces of wood on the table saw and then putting together. So I made a structure. Well, there's so many things that you've probably never seen that I made.
Away. Do you
I have one that's all fallen apart left, there were, I don't know what happened to all the rest of them. Some of them sold. But so you would make a structure, the rectilinear solid structure. And then some of them had a little pointed, like a steeple roof. Then I would apply rice paper. I would cut pieces of rice paper and then I'd dampen it, like mist it enough that it was dampened, and then glue it on. And then when it dried taut. And these were very pretty little houses. And some had little doors with little beads and things.
How cute.
And then you'd open up. Oh, and then the paintings were put on, they were beautiful paper that I'd either use the decalage or tear them or something. And then I would hang them with little strings on a little dowel that I handmade and hand polished, that I would put on little hooks that I handmade inside the thing. So you'd open the doors and then there'd be, and they were, there was like, I was on a rose theme, but I did all kinds of things in those boxes, but particularly I did a lot of roses in watercolor. You'd open it up and there'd be a rose. So it was almost an altar at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I have this pure aesthetic attraction to the little box and creating little boxes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, even talking about this is appealing. It's just like, I just want to keep talking about all the different kinds of boxes there are. So what is it, you know? We've talked about the practicality, that makes sense, and the little shelter aspect.
Well, it defines inside and outside. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, it sort of creates the potential for a mystery. You know, there's something mysterious about something dark and protected and sealed off and inaccessible about a closed box. And then to be able to open it and see what's inside, or flip the lid over up and see what's inside, it's exciting. We've all received hundreds of presents over the years, which probably all came in boxes, most of them. And that excitement of opening the box to see what's inside is a pretty universal stressor for kids. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that by the time you're a teenager, you've had your mind blown by the contents of a box a few times at least. But there's something kind of eternal about
there's something primary, the emptiness inside. The inside and the outside. And
the enshrinement of whatever is inside the box, potentially. It could be just a thing, you know, wrapped in crumpled newspaper that you got from UPS, but it could be a box like Bill's describing with so much care going into the box that the box becomes a temple, not just a box. Mm-hmm. And the thing inside is a shrine.
But then I also made boxes to put that box in.
Yes.
Because those delicate rice paper boxes, if you wanted to transport them,
yes,
I would have to then. Well, I actually made special cardboard, took regular cardboard boxes, and then made little supports inside to lay the beautiful special box to protect it. But I also, out of wood, would construct a box, a joined box, with lids and screws that was so that the little thing just fit in it just ever so perfectly and slid in, and then the lid went on and that screwed. And just talking about, like you say, sort of enlivens this love of boxes.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm going to be doing in my shop. The next series of projects are all box oriented. Sound coming out of a box is one thing. And I've been planning to build for quite some time a couple of wall-mounted observatories, I guess, that you would stick your head into to see something. But in the process of sticking your head into it or up to the viewing port or whatever it is, you would also be placing your head between two non-obvious speakers, which would be the equivalent of donning a pair of headphones, and you'd be able to hear a very expanded sound space that through binaural recording could sound very realistic and be very, very believable. And you do it without consciously doing something involving sound, because your attention would be on looking into this thing, this box. So what you would see would be one thing, but in the process of seeing it, you would be able to hear something that you normally could never hear in a gallery.
Now, would it be such that you wouldn't be able to hear it until you put your head in?
Oh, you'd
that
hear
spot.
It faintly.
Yeah.
It depends what it is. I'm thinking mostly of environmental kinds of sounds. Mm-hmm. So you might not notice them until you stuck your head into the sweet spot. But it's very dramatic. I used to do a demonstration with a pair of speakers that I just had in the living room. Someone would sit down on the couch and I would hold a speaker in each hand and put on a recording that had good binaural spatial properties to it, and hold both speakers up in front of them, one over the other, and then they would hear it as monophonic sound with both ears, and the sound, you could tell what it was. Mm-hmm. And then I would very quickly move the speakers so that they were on either side of the person's head, and it's the effect sonically and you know, mentally is striking. Mm-hmm. Wow. Suddenly it's a real space and you're in it, instead of just a symbol of a space that you recognize.
Yeah.
And that's part of the kind of thinking outside the box to create a box whose interior is unbounded by the box.
Well, at one time I was in a store in, I think, Austin, Texas, someplace in Texas, and they had a chair. It was an audio store, and they had a chair that came around your head, like your box that you just described, with a speaker in each side of the top of the chair, and and it was real comfortable, and you sat there and listened, and it was, for me, the best sound experience that I'd ever had before.
Well, you can get pretty wonderful sound out of headphones, because the speakers involved are playing at very, very soft levels. Mm-hmm. So most of the distortion that you have to deal with big speaker systems in order to fill the room just aren't happening.
So today, instead of coming outside the box, we got into the box and had a lot of fun.
We really got into the boxes. Yes. I hope our audience found it as interesting as we did.
You never
it's kind
know.
Of a boxy kind of thing.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.